Hi, everyone. My name is Javier Roman. I'm the Marketing and Engagement Manager with the Rockford Symphony Orchestra, and I'm here today with Yaniv Attar, Music Director of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra. Hi, Yaniv. How are you?
Hi, Javier. Good to see you.
And we have kind of a special episode of the podcast today because we also have with us, kind of in spirit, not in the room with us, unfortunately, but we have in spirit with us the three composers who are going to be featured on our performance of Ellis Island, Dream of America. Something we really wanted to highlight for this performance and we thought was special is that all three of these composers, whose pieces we will perform, are living. So we thought it would be really great to hear from them and get their perspective on their pieces because they are able to share that with us. So we're going to hear a little bit from our composers as well as from myself and Yaniv. So first off, I wanted to talk about the Suite for Improviser and Orchestra. Can you just tell us a little bit about it?
This piece is one of the most interesting concerti that I've ever conducted because my job as a conductor is to accompany a soloist. And when I accompany a soloist, I have to know their part extremely well so I can know exactly where they twist and turn and where I can direct the orchestra to follow them. In this concerto, I remember when I got the score, and there's no solo part, and so for me, I feel like I'm always, on the edge. I don't know what the soloist is going to do. The piece could be 20 minutes, it could be 26 minutes, it could be 30. I have no idea, and I have to look for cues from the soloist. But I have the frame. Where the soloist improvise, that makes it a very, very unique experience because it's almost like I'm improvising with him on stage, and whatever he does, even from rehearsal to performance, is 180 degrees different. Yeah. It's a really strange experience, but also really, really fun.
Yeah, that's exciting. And also really exciting is who is our soloist.
So Kinan Azme is a Syrian, I think he's now an American, but born and raised in Syria. I met him when we were both students at Juilliard, and we struck a good friendship already then. He's an incredible musician. He toured a lot with the Silk Road Ensemble, lots of collaboration with the famous Yo-Yo Ma. I think what's so wonderful about Kinan is that he blends, he's classically trained, and he blends the elements of classical, jazz, and of course his home country, so a lot of Arabic music, in this absolutely incredible way that make you feel it's like, is it classical, is it world music, is it jazz? But it's almost as if he created his own musical language, which is so fun to play. It's so fun to listen to. The audience is going to have a blast.
Yeah, so it's really a unique thing because Kinan Azme, who is the soloist on clarinet for this performance, is also the composer.
Yeah.
Right? He's the one who composed this piece. So it has that really unique relationship, and he kind of touches on that. Let's hear a little bit from him about kind of the inspiration to this piece and how he's tying in those different elements that you talked about.
This piece was composed somewhere between 2006 to 2008. It was originally three pieces that I written for my ensemble back in Damascus. It was an improvising ensemble. And then I decided to bring several hats under one thing. I enjoyed improvising, enjoyed playing with orchestras, enjoyed the sound of orchestras, and I wanted to bring all of these to one place. So I wrote this piece in three movements: Love on 139th Street in D, second movement is November 22nd, and the last movement is Wedding. And every movement is about an improvising soloist, and the piece can be played by any instrument, really. The story behind every movement is different. Love on 139 is an homage to a neighborhood that I lived in Harlem, in New York, when I moved to New York. And I remember the sound of my first floor neighbor, who used to blast merengue and reggaeton all the time, and how that rhythm, which crept into the fourth floor where I was living, crept into the pieces I wanted to write when I was sitting to write, trying to be inspired by Damascus, my original home city. So it's an homage to what home is, I think, and how our sonic landscape changes when we change locations. The second movement, November 22nd, was written the day after I was invited to my first Thanksgiving dinner, and how it was the first time that I felt at home away from home. So the piece tries to depict some kind of, again, it's about home and what home means, and how, as an immigrant, I think you try very hard to feel at home in a new place. But the moment you do so, you feel bad for feeling good. And there's an ambiguous feeling about, can I have more than one home at the same time? And the third movement, Wedding, is inspired by the mood and the spirit one can find in a Syrian village wedding and how unpredictable these parties can be. It's a community getting together and the musicians show up and they play whatever they like to play. It's a fast and furious and wild movement and features heavily also the percussionists in addition to the soloist. So I think, again, in short, the three movements are about home, are about questioning home and what that means, and about feeling at home also as a composer, improviser, and a collaborator with the orchestra.
Yeah, so a lot to unpack there, right?
Yes.
Like you said, all these different influences. The one I really thought was interesting was the Latin influence that he talked about from his neighbor, you know, blasting reggaeton and merengue. And, you know, if you're not familiar with that music, it is very rhythmic. It's very percussion-driven. So I'm interested to see how that comes across.
Well, a lot of Kinan's music is extremely rhythmic. And a lot of the things that I have to prepare the orchestra with is for some very unusual rhythms that they might not be used to. The time signatures are crazy that I've never seen before in classical music. And I will have to explain to them how we do this and rhythm that go against each other. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah. I think the other thing he was talking about, which really fits into the theme of this performance and the spirit of the concert in general, is this idea of home, right? As we're talking about Ellis Island and immigrants coming to America, finding a new home, and what that means to people, and what that has meant to people across generations, I think is really important. And I think it's interesting to hear his perspective of how his compositions, his own works, have become his home. Kind of to what you were saying earlier, that he's kind of created his own language.
It's very true. And, you know, it just occurred to me, the first piece that we played this season with the Rockford Symphony Orchestra was the Symphonic Dances by Rachmaninoff, which he wrote also in America while he was extremely homesick to his, you know, homeland Russia. So there is that feeling that, you know, and it expressed so beautifully in music of, you know, you being in your own country and trying to assimilate to the new culture, to the new music, and at the same time, the feeling of homesick and you know, bringing out your roots in music. And in a way, the way Kinan's music infuses in his music today, I think shows that combination of old home with the new home, so to speak.
Yeah, and really some of the greatest pieces in the classical repertoire have kind of followed that theme. Kind of shameless plug, although this episode will probably air after our chamber concert this Sunday, right, February 23rd, the American String Quartet, right, kind of had that same theme where Dvorak was in America longing for his home, and he found it in kind of this, they talk about this rural town in Iowa.
Yeah,
where he found
absolutely
this idea of home, and it inspired what is now known as the American String Quartet.
Right, absolutely.
So yeah, we see this theme come up over and over again in music of these different composers finding home in music, even when they're away from their traditional or original home.
Yeah.
I think that's really powerful.
That is powerful.
We asked Kinan also to kind of expand upon what are some of the key elements that we want people to listen to, that the audience should be looking for, or what are some things that he thinks really stands out in this piece? And here's what he had to say.
So the elements that the audience should be looking for, I think the interaction between the soloist and an orchestra is really important. And you will see that visually, but also you will be able to hear it. Me as a soloist, as an improviser and a composer, I try in my work at large to walk this fine line between the composed and the improvised. I believe that some of the best improvised music is music that sounds as if it is composed. It sounds structured with form, while some of the best compositions are for me ones that sound improvised because they sound very spontaneous and fluid. So I'm going to be trying to do that also in the performance, trying to navigate between the composed and the improvised. I think that's something that I want people not to notice, but I want to tell them that also that exists. I'm sure the audience will hear a clear rhythmical pulse. These are, the trio movements are groove-based, so there's a very strong sense of rhythm in the pieces. The first one is in a conventional, 2-4 feel. The second movement is in a very unconventional rhythm of 21-16. And the last movement is another unconventional rhythm of 15-8. And all of these are basically rhythm that I've created. These are not based on any traditional rhythms or melodies. I think there's something else to be said about this is also my music is inspired by music of home, of Syria at large, but also inspired by Balkan music, by Armenian music, Kurdish music, and of course Western classical music, because that's what I studied throughout my life. But also I'm inspired by jazz and by the music of my chosen city, New York City, where I lived for the last 24 years. So lots of these elements, I think, will surface in the three movements as we play it.
Yeah, so you brushed on some things we were talking about earlier. One that you pointed out was the unique meters that are in these pieces. Can you kind of explain that to someone who doesn't know what 15-8 means? Or
I remember seeing the second movement, and I saw 21-16. I have never seen any time signature. And I said, how on earth am I going to conduct this? In classical music, and especially the traditional classical music, there are usually clear patterns, either 2-4, 3-4, and 4-4. Then there's, sometimes different, but, you would see the conductor do like a clear four pattern, down, left, right, and up. Three is down, right, and up. So it looks like a triangle. In every time I looked at what Kinan is doing, I had to figure out what is the groupings in the music. So sometimes the 21-16, I had to conduct 4 and then 3 and then 2 and then just 1 that equals 3-8.
Yeah.
Sometimes the 21 would have to be divided to 3 7-8s. So 1-2-1-2, 1-2-3, 1-2-1-2, 3-1-2-1-2, 1-2-3.
Wow.
So that adds up to 21.
Yeah.
So, I would conduct 3 bars in the first pattern that I described, and then I would have to move to 3. Whatever made more sense for the music at that time, mm-hmm. And of course, what would be more useful to the musicians. It's unconventional.
Yeah.
It's not, usually when we conduct 4-4 and 3-4, the orchestra doesn't need to look for that anymore because they're so used to it.
Mm-hmm.
But when the piece is so rhythmically complicated, then it makes a whole different thing. Okay, let's look at the conductor now.
Yeah. Yeah. And who says music isn't math?
Right. Oh, it's totally math.
So all of that's going through your head as you're kind of conducting of how you're grouping these, and is that changing throughout the piece too?
Oh yeah, I can have 3 bars of 4-3-2-1, and then 3 bars of 3-7-8s,
wow.
And then go back to that. And the thing is, because those rhythms and those time signatures are not ones that I'm used to conducting all the time. Mm-hmm, it's not mm-hmm. second nature, like 3-4 and 4-4 and all the other classical music that we do. You can't get lost. Yeah. But the other thing is that the music is so, like Kinan said, very grooved bass.
Mm-hmm.
It's also something that you cannot think about.
You have to
feel it, because if you start thinking about it, you'll get lost.
Yeah.
So if you don't feel it, and that's for the musicians as well, if mm-hmm. you start counting too much and if you don't have it as a eternal pulse, then you lose it.
So really keeping you on your toes here.
Oh, yeah.
Really cool. Something I thought also was really interesting that he mentioned was this idea of not noticing the improvisation, which I thought was really cool. And he touches on that a little bit more. So let's hear a little bit more from Keenan.
Being the composer and the soloist actually is kind of fun, because I cannot be more myself more than that. Even when I play pieces from the repertoire, when I play the Mozart Clarinet Concerto, I think it's important that one stays true to himself or herself performing these pieces. I try to make myself believe that I compose that music as well, because I think only then can you present an honest performance. When I perform my own music, I think that happens by default. This is fully me, but also I want it to be the orchestra's as well. So like the job doesn't end there. I'm not a soloist and I'm a composer in a vacuum, but I'm interacting with the conductor, with the percussionist, with the orchestra at large. And that's what makes it exciting. And at times, actually, I forget that I'm the composer and I just go with the flow. It's a wonderful, also new definition of home. This 22 minutes where you feel you are incredibly at home sonically. There's the familiar because you composed it. There is the unfamiliar, which is improvisations where you surprise yourself. And there's the new aspect of collaboration with the orchestra, and when you try to transform, together with the conductor, transform the orchestra into a band of sort, where there's the soloist, conductor, orchestra, and rhythm section. All of them have like equal importance in this stew we're cooking together.
Yeah, so to what you were mentioning earlier, it really just, you just kind of feel it. And once the music is going, you kind of get lost in it. Right? You're not counting. You're not thinking about the meter. You're not thinking about...
It's totally spontaneous.
Yeah.
And you know, as a classical musician, for myself, who's only trained classically, I remember like, because I've done this piece with Keenan once, I remember conducting it and being in total admiration of what he's able to do on stage just like that. You know, we are so, as classical musicians, we're so programmed to do what we practice and follow it to, you know, the utmost perfection without that kind of spontaneity, which is incredible.
That's what I think makes this piece sound really exciting. Last question we had for Keenan was just a little bit more on this improvisation and how is that changing and how does he then coordinate that with you and when it is so fresh and new every time. So let's hear what he had to say about that.
This is actually also what's fun about people who come and hear this piece over and over with different orchestras. I make sure that I don't repeat my improvisations. For me, it's very important that I don't get bored with what I'm playing. So I promise myself before every concert, Keenan, you are not gonna repeat whatever felt good the last time I played the piece. So I try to reinvent myself as much as I can. And in that sense, I keep my ears open because some exciting things also happen during the performance coming from the orchestra itself. So I try to adapt and change. But I think also this feature where music actually is different every time is not only in improvised music, but it's also every time you play a Brahms symphony, it sounds different. And that's why I think we continue to go and see live concerts, even when the repertoire is the same. Because, in fact, the music is not the same, and we as audience members who are sitting there also are not in the same mindset as we were one minute before or one minute after. I like to think of music as an interactive tour de force between the creator and the recipient, because I think both the performer on stage and the audience who's listening, they're equally involved in the creative process, because somebody's creating the music, the other one is actually analyzing this music and connecting it to things that only that person knows. All of that, I think, makes live art and live music something of incredible importance.
Yeah, so really the beauty of the live performance, right?
You know, for me, I've only done it once. And again, even, you know, I did it in rehearsal with him. I remember we had only one rehearsal. And I've kind of got what he's doing. And then And then he came to the concert and he went totally different direction. I mean, he was playing like insane things. And I said, whoa, where is he going? And when is it? When is my next thing? When is it going to stop? I have to like, it's in a way scary, but in a way exciting. And the danger for me is I can't listen to him too much also, because then I'm like enjoying myself and I have to be ready for what comes next. So it's the adrenaline is so high.
All right. Well, let's shift gears here a little bit. I wanted to talk about the Arturo Marquez piece, Conga del Fuego Nuevo. Can you just tell us a brief introduction on that?
So when I first came to audition, actually, to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra, I chose to program one of Marquez, probably his most performed work, which is the Danzón No. 2. He's Mexican composer, still alive. He came really to the fore and became famous because of two things. One, thanks to Gustavo Dudamel, who was back then the music director of the Venezuelan Youth Orchestra, and he performed this piece in Carnegie Hall and on tour. And then it was also featured, if you saw the series Mozart in the Jungle, I think it was on Netflix. And, you know, it's about classical music and et cetera. And it was performed there a lot. And I really love this music. It's lots of folk music influences, fun rhythms. And I was looking for a piece and kind of an overture that will just be fun to listen to with in mind what an overture should be. And I think this kind of overture, which is, you know, so influenced by the rhythm of the conga, was a wonderful way. It's very short, very energetic, electrifying, fun way to open this program.
So let's learn a little bit about Arturo. And he is, in the recording I found, speaking in his native tongue, Spanish. So I'm going to do some quick on-the-fly translation for us. So he says, at 14 years old, I started studying music. And that's because my mom didn't want me to study music. My father was a mariachi musician, and he would go out on the weekends, and he would come home late, and my mom didn't want that life for me. She didn't want that for me. But I wanted to study piano. And I entered the conservatory in the 70s. And I remember entering, and the director told me, no, here students start at 8 years old, 9 years old. And I was 14. So they rejected me. They rejected me from joining the conservatory to learn piano. So it was a kind of failure in my life, and I didn't know where to go from there. But in 79, we asked for a scholarship to go study in France. And there in France, I did the exam to enter the conservatory, and they rejected me again. So a sequence of failures now in my life. But I took advantage of the time there, and I studied privately with some teachers. And I took some classes on orchestration and contemporary composition. And it gave me a new direction of my life. And so I got another scholarship to go to CalArts, California Institute of the Arts. And there I was there for 2 years, and I learned composition on the computer, and I learned jazz and world music. And it was a very experimental school. I loved it. It was kind of the golden era of my education. And so I finished studying there, and I wasn't sure what was next. But in 93, they commissioned a work for me that completely changed the direction of my life. It gave me a new life. And that was the Danzón No. 2. And the Danzón 2 was really a fork in the road for me that changed my career. So yeah, good callback there where if, yep, that was the piece that, one of the pieces that you did your audition here with the Rockford Symphony.
And you know, many of people in the orchestra, I remember, did not know the piece, and the audience didn't know the piece, and people
loved
kept
it.
Telling me how much they loved it. And I said, okay, his music really speaks to people.
People loved it.
It's like you connect to it immediately. It's just like it gets into you, and you want to get up and dance.
Yeah, yeah. So if you remember that piece from Yaniv's audition, you're sure to love this one as well.
Absolutely. It's so much fun.
All right, so for the second half of the performance, really one of the big highlights and the name of the concert overall, right, is Peter Boyer's Ellis Island, The Dream of America. It's a really exciting piece, and can you just tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's almost 45 minutes long, a piece for quite a big orchestra, and there are also seven actors or narrators, and there's a big screen with projected images that are projected throughout the performance, and each of the narrators portrays one immigrant that came to America through Ellis Island. And I mean, it's amazing to see how many people today living in America have some kind of connection. I mean, it's a humongous number to somebody who came through Ellis Island. And the narrators are reading, because I mean, these are real testimonies of immigrants who came through Ellis Island. There's an overture by the orchestra, and then there's interludes moving from one story to another. It's almost like seeing a movie without the movie, you know, in that sense. It's done very well. It's very moving music, bringing the stories to life with the incredible music of Peter Boyer.
Very exciting. Yeah, so it's a multimedia kind of presentation. So
yeah, I don't think we've ever collaborated here in Rockford with the local theater company.
No, which is Artists Ensemble Theater will be providing the actors for us who are doing the narration. So we have actors from Artists Ensemble Theater. Like you said, we have the projected images on the screen. And of course, this really, really moving cinematic music.
Yeah, very powerful work. Very powerful work.
Yeah. So let's hear a little bit from Peter Boyer, just some of the background about this piece and some of the inspiration.
Ellis Island, The Dream of America, is a 45-minute work for actors and orchestra and projected images. And it was composed between the years of 2001 and 2002. So we are now amazingly coming up on its 20th anniversary. The texts for the piece come from the Ellis Island Oral History Project, which is a collection of first-person interviews with actual Ellis Island immigrants. I chose the stories of seven different immigrants who came from seven different countries between the years of 1910 and 1940. I knew from the very beginning that I wanted to conclude the piece with a reading of the poem The New Colossus by Emma Lazarus. Those words were written nearly 140 years ago, when the world was a different world from the way it is today. But something about those words remains absolutely as relevant as they were when they were written. And I think this is part of what speaks to the truth of these stories and this human journey.
Yes, I think really the thing that intrigues me the most about this is that these are real stories.
Absolutely.
You know, it wasn't anything that was crafted by Peter Boyer. These are real testimonies of these people. He states that it was through the collection of the Ellis Island Oral Project. So listening to these stories and just understanding that these were real people's lives, their strifes, and the reasons for them coming to America.
Yeah, and I'm sure he had a hard time, trying to choose seven out of thousands that he must have read to choose one that will each bring something else to the piece. Mm-hmm. And from different country, different spirit. Some of them are more, have some humor in it. Some of them are really dark. But I think the common thing is that everybody was were looking for the same thing, for a new life, new opportunity, freedom. And they were able to find it right here in America.
And I think that really speaks to this theme as a whole, that it is all these different people, these different personalities, different nationalities coming together, like you said, for the same goal.
Right.
So we asked Peter Boyer to tell us a little bit about the impact of this piece, where it's been performed, things like that. So let's hear from him.
The piece has been performed in some wonderful venues, including New York's Carnegie Hall, Chicago's Orchestra Hall, Pittsburgh's Heinz Hall, Fort Worth's Bass Hall, and Costa Mesa's Sagerstrom Hall, along with Prospect Park in Brooklyn. It's been performed by more than 100 different orchestras around the United States at all budget sizes, from major orchestras to regional orchestras to small professional college and community orchestras. Literally thousands of orchestral musicians across all of these orchestras and many hundreds of actors have participated in the piece. This is a great gift. Without a doubt, one of the most thrilling and gratifying aspects of the entire history of Ellis Island over the last 20 years, and in fact of my entire career as a composer, was the production of Ellis Island for PBS's Great Performances. This was filmed with Pacific Symphony, conductor Carl St. Clair, and a marvelous cast of actors at Sagerstrom Concert Hall in Costa Mesa. Those national telecasts were carried by some 300 PBS stations. It really was a dream come true to have the work reach such an audience in such a profoundly moving production.
Yeah, so that's really big for a modern work, isn't it?
I can't think of any other American composer that wrote something in the last 20 years that got such an incredible exposure in the genre of classical music.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks a lot to how much this topic touches people's lives and how much the music was so powerful, and everybody say how much they were moved by the performance of it. So, I mean, he gave us an incredible gift that is relevant to us today as it did 20 years ago in different ways, mm-hmm. but it's still relevant. But it speaks a volume on how powerful this work, and that it will live in eternity, I'm sure.
Yeah, and like you said, just how closely it resonates with people.
Right.
So something very recent that Peter Boyer has announced and kind of made a big deal about is it recently celebrated its 300th performance.
Yeah.
Which, like we said, is major for a new contemporary work.
Absolutely. One of the last ones were with the Cleveland Orchestra, I saw. So, I mean, major orchestras are programming it again because they know how emotional this performance of this could be. And it's important for us to be able to do it. And I'm so excited that we're not doing it not only in a Masterworks concert, but also in an education concert. So a lot
That's
of
right.
school children will be able to hear that. And, you know, it takes a lot to do this piece. You need the big orchestra, the screen for the images. You need the actors. So that's something you do every year. Mm-hmm. So for Rockford to be able to do this, not only for our audience, but also for many school kids, I think it's a real gift.
Yeah, it's a gem to have this presented here right. in Rockford when you hear about the places it's
yeah.
getting played. And we were close to being the 300th.
Oh, really?
Well, I think so, because he just recently, I think last
right.
month.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been cool if that was Rockford, but we're the 300-something. But that is exciting as well. To touch on what you kind of mentioned earlier, is how this is resonating with people and how it continues to resonate with people. Like Peter Boyer said, this piece is over 20 years old now, but it continues to have significance. So let's hear from him a little bit about how this piece has continued its relevance to celebrate those 300 performances, why it continues to be a topic of conversation for us.
So as I reflect on 20 years of my life with Ellis Island, I think to myself, why has the piece endured in the way that it has? And the answer certainly has to be that the stories which are celebrated in the piece are so universal. And it's the combination of the stories and the music that hopefully is something greater than the sum of its parts. And as I think about the many performances of the piece which I've attended around the country, how meaningful it's been to me to have so many people come up to me emotionally after a performance of the piece and to say, that was my father's story, or that was my grandmother's story, that was my family's story. And there's something so universal about these stories that I think speaks to us in a very fundamental way.
Absolutely. I think that's where the relevance comes from and why it resonates so closely with us is because, like you said, so many people can trace their lineage back to someone who came through Ellis Island. So many of us, whether at a farther distance or closer, are immigrants here to the United States. And that's what makes this topic so personal for us.
Not even related to just the United States. You know, my family, I grew up in Israel, but my family immigrated from Morocco to Israel. So they were immigrants, and I knew how they felt as immigrants in a country. I came to America as an immigrant. I'm a citizen now, but I was an immigrant. And I think there's always going to be this, either people escaping places of horror or looking for a new life. And I think what resonates so much, like Peter Boyer said, is the human element of those stories. And again, everybody could resonate with, either from themselves, from a relative, from a friend they know. And I think that's what makes our society so great. I mean, I think we are definitely more diverse. We are enriched by different cultures. And, you know, Rockford, like many other places, has been very welcoming to immigrants. And I think that's something that needed to be celebrated. And we have to be reminded of those incredible stories and history that brought people here, not just to make their better lives better, but also to enrich us as society. What did they say? Diversity is our strength.
Yes, yes.
I love that saying.
Yeah, so around this performance, we worked a lot with Midway Village. We went out and visited the Swedish Historical Society. We've talked with some of the Italian clubs around here. Because, like you said, Rockford has been so welcoming, and it really is a town that was founded upon the immigrants that came here, particularly the Swedish and the Italians. And I think that's why it is so important of a performance here in Rockford, because we do have that history. And something I'm also really excited about for this performance is we're collecting some of our community stories. I know you submitted one already.
Yeah, with my picture when I got my citizenship. I was really proud.
Yeah, to share all of those stories. Even some of our staff members here have lineage back to Ellis Island. Board members, a lot of our musicians as well. Some of them are first-generation immigrants, or some of them, again, can trace that lineage back to Ellis Island, which is really cool to see.
There's a beautiful line in the Peter Boyer piece at the end. One of the narrators says, "We're all immigrants in one way or another. It's just a question of who came first and who came when."
Yeah.
And it's very true. And once we see that common history of, you know, we're all immigrants and now we're making this society, you know, work beautifully, or should. That's what we should always aim for. You know, we should never stop aiming for that. When we see that common ground, I think we're able to, you know, treat each other differently with kindness and compassion because we're all the same.
Yeah, I think the human element to this, like you said,
absolutely,
from stories, that feeling really resonates with us personally.
Yeah.
And what I think is what I'm most excited about for this concert. So we do have a lot of other things planned around this concert. Like you mentioned, this will also be a part of our youth concert where we'll have students from around the area come and hear this performance. So a little bit different this concert cycle. We will not have a sound bites, but we have a lot of other exciting things planned in lieu of that. So one of those is a prelude talk, not by Yaniv this time. We're actually going to hear from local Rockford historian Gary Anderson, who has compiled a long list of the industrial history in Rockford and how that has been shaped. And he's going to bring that presentation to the Coronado before the performance, which I think will be really exciting. No matter how much you think you know Rockford or how long you've been here, he has something new for you to learn. He has a lot of history. Other things that we're excited about during the intermission and before the performance, there will be an expo of some local cultural organizations in the lobby. So that includes Midway Village, Swedish Historical Society, Ethnic Heritage Museum, La Onda, which is a Latino-based organization. Just providing some information about what they do, where you can learn more if you're interested to capture some more of that Rockford history. One of the huge collaborations we had was with Midway Village, where they compiled a list of immigrant cultures that have come through Rockford throughout the decades. So it's a really cool document to see how Rockford has been shaped that way.
And I think that's what makes this concert so special, because there's so much community collaboration. And when a whole community comes together to present something like this, it's the biggest artistic triumph you can have.
Yeah, and it really will be a celebration, I think.
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to it. So that is on March 8th, 7:30 p.m. in the Coronado Theater, Ellis Island, The Dream of America. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
Yeah, and you can learn more or purchase tickets at rockfordsymphony.com. Well, thank you so much, Yaniv, for sitting down with me. It was really exciting, really different to hear from some of our composers.
Absolutely.
As well. Get to hear from them firsthand a little bit more about their piece.
My pleasure, Javier.